Goliath. So, 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Now the Philistines gathered together their armies to battle, and were gathered together at Shoko, which belongeth to Judah, and pitched between Shoko and Azekah in Ephes-Damim. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together and pitched by the valley of Elah, and set the battle in array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on the one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, and there was a valley between them. And there went out a champion out of the camp of the Philistines named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. And he had a helmet of brass upon his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of brass. And he had greaves of brass upon his legs, and a target of brass between his shoulders. And the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron, and one bearing a shield went before him. And he stood and cried unto the armies of Israel, and said unto them, Why are ye come out to set your battle in array? Am not I a Philistine, and ye servants to Saul? Choose you a man for you, and let him come down to me. If he be able to fight with me and to kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then shall ye be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now David was the son of that Ephrathite of Bethlehem, Judah, whose name was Jesse, and he had 8 sons. And the man went among men for an old man in the days of Saul. And the 3 eldest sons of Jesse went and followed Saul to the battle. And the names of his 3 sons that went to the battle were Eliab the firstborn, and next unto him Abinadab, and the 3rd Shammah. And David was the youngest, and the 3 eldest followed Saul. But David went and returned from Saul to feed his father's sheep at Bethlehem. And the Philistine drew near morning and evening, and presented himself 40 days. And Jesse said unto David his son, Take now for thy brethren an ephah of this parched corn, and these 10 loaves, and run to the camp of thy brethren, or to thy brethren, and carry these 10 cheeses unto the captain of their 1,000, and look how thy brethren fare, and take their pledge. Now Saul and they, and all the men of Israel, were in the valley of Elah, fighting with the Philistines. And David rose up early in the morning, and left the sheep with a keeper, and took and went as Jesse had commanded him, and came to the trench as the host was going forth to the fight, and shouted for the battle. For Israel and the Philistines had put the battle in array, army against army. And David left his carriage in the hand of the keeper of the carriage, and ran into the army, and came and saluted his brethren. And as he talked with them, behold, there came up the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, out of the armies of the Philistines, and spake according to the same words. And David heard them. And all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and were sore afraid. And the men of Israel said, Have ye seen this man that is come up? Surely to defy Israel he is come up, and it shall be that the man who killeth him, the king will enrich him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel. And David spake to the men that stood by him, saying, What shall be done to the man that killeth this Philistine, and taketh away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine, that he should defy the armies of the living God? And the people answered him after this manner, saying, So shall it be done to the man that killeth him. And Eliab, his eldest brother, heard when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, Why camest thou down hither, And with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know thy pride and the naughtiness of thy heart. For thou art come down that thou mightest see the battle. And David said, What have I now done? Is there not a cause? And he turned from him toward another, and spake after the same manner. And the people answered him again after the former manner. And when the words were heard which David spake, they rehearsed them before Saul, and he sent for him. And David said to Saul, Let no man's heart fail because of him. Thy servant will go out and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, Thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock. And I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard, and smote him, and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, The Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said unto David, Go, and the Lord be with thee. And Saul armed David with his armor. And he put an helmet of brass upon his head. Also he armed him with a coat of mail. And David girded his sword upon his armor, and he essayed to go, for he had not proved it. And David said to Saul, I cannot go with these, for I have not proved them. And David put them off him. And he took his staff in his hand, and chose him 5 smooth stones out of the brook, and put them in a shepherd's bag which he had, even in a scrip. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. And the Philistine came on, and drew near unto David, and the man that bare the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, and ruddy, and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog, that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then said David to the Philistine, Thou comest unto me with a sword, and with a spear, and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee, and I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day unto the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all Israel may know that there is a God, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And all this assembly shall know that the Lord saveth not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. And it came to pass, when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, that David hasted and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand into his bag and took thence a stone and slung it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sunk into his forehead, and he fell upon his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, and smote the Philistine and slew him. But there was no sword in the hand of David. Therefore David ran and stood upon the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of the sheath thereof and slew him and cut off his head therewith. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and of Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines until thou come to the valley and to the gates of Ekron. And the wounded of the Philistines fell down by the way to Shaaraim, even unto Gath and unto Ekron. And the children of Israel returned from chasing after the Philistines, and they spoiled their tents. And David took the head of the Philistines and brought it, the head of the Philistine, and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. And when Saul saw David go forth against the Philistine, he said unto Abner, the captain of the host, Abner, whose son is this youth? And Abner said, "As my soul liveth, O king, I cannot tell." And the king said, "Inquire, thou whose son this stripling is." And as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said unto him, "Whose son art thou, thou young man?" And David answered, "I am the son of thy servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Children, this is a story you know, isn't it? Yeah, you know this story? This is one of our favorites, isn't it? Is it a story or is it true? Is it a legend? Is it just a tale that is told? Or is it true history in Israel? It's true history in Israel. Something that really took place. You know how we know this? Because this Bible comes from whom? Remember our first sermon today? It comes from the Amen, the faithful and true witness, who always tells us exactly how things are and how things were and how things will be. Right? And so, yeah, this is a real story. This is not just a cartoon characters that you see, a cartoon and characters you see playing out on a television screen, and you turn the TV off and you say, "Oh, wow, what a nice story. That was fun." It's real history. True life stuff. There was a real day when the sun came up and went down, a day like many, many other days where the sun comes up and goes down, except on this day, a young man with a sling and a stone killed a giant with a sword and a spear. It's a very wonderful story about exactly what David says, that the battle is the Lord's. The battle is the Lord's. And I want you to take courage from that, because the battle for your heart, that's the Lord's too. That's the Lord's too. And He will bring it to pass. He will bring victory. So, we begin then at the beginning of the chapter, the valley of Elah. That's a valley that runs east and west from near to Jerusalem, not quite as far east as Jerusalem, but from that point there's a creek that runs near Gath and Ekron, and it goes out to sea just south of Ashkelon. So yeah, you can look up that valley today, the Valley of Elah, although it's no longer called the Valley of Elah. I don't remember the name of it now, but you can find that place on the map if you look for it. And so there are two armies that are gathered together on either side of this valley, one on the mountains on one side, one on the mountains on the other side. It's not a mountain like the Sierras, that kind of mountain, you know, or the Rockies. It's a mountain that you can get down from by walking down into the valley. It is elevated perhaps as much as 1,000 or maybe 1,500 feet, but it's not something that you can't simply traverse quickly. And when it says that they were on the mountain, it doesn't mean they were on the top of the mountain. It just means that they were up out of the valley and they had arrayed themselves army against army so they could look at each other across the valley. Okay? It's not a very wide valley, just a mile or so. And so it's pretty clear what's going on here. It's not a huge geographical difficulty that they have. They've just arrayed themselves together on one side and on the other. Now, there's this great big guy, Goliath. He's 6 cubits and a span. The cubit is a difficult measurement. Sometimes we think of it, in some cases in history, as artifacts have been studied. Sometimes it's as short as 16 inches. Sometimes 18, and then there's what's called a royal cubit, which is 20.2 inches. So there are different measurements for a cubit. We don't know exactly which one is being used here by the writer of this book, probably Samuel, but it's hard to know for sure. But the 18 inches is a decent figure. So this tells us that Goliath is somewhere around 8 feet tall, maybe a little bit more than that. I know that some Bible books, encyclopedias and so on, have him closer to 9.5 or so. I think probably a safe figure is between 8 foot and 8 foot six, somewhere in that height, which still makes him someone who has to, his shoulders would hit on the top of a standard doorway. That's big. That's really, really big. So his shoulders, you know, tops of doorways are 6 foot six. His shoulders would hit the top of the doorway. Not only would he have to duck to get his head through, he'd have to scrunch his shoulders to get his shoulders through. Okay, and he's probably wide enough to where he'd have to turn partially sideways to get through the door. That's the size of man that we're talking about here. His armament that he wore, 5,000 shekels. Okay, how much is that? It's about 100 pounds. So he's big enough and strong enough to wear 100 pounds of stuff and still be able to move around and fight. Well, that's a lot. It kind of tells you his size, strength, and prowess. His spear, the end of his spear was an iron tip on it. The end of the spear, the iron portion, weighed 600 shekels, which is about 16 pounds. How many of you have ever gone bowling? Okay, the heaviest bowling ball that you can lift off of the shelf is 16 pounds. Now, put that out on the end of a spear and try to hold the spear up. Okay? We're getting the proportions here. He's pretty big, pretty strong, pretty tough. And not only that, but keep in mind that as a soldier, he puts that stuff on every day and trains with it every day. So that's the kind of guy Goliath is. But there's something else about Goliath. Before that, let's talk about his spear. It's about the size of what's called a weaver's beam. Now, we don't do much weaving anymore, so that's kind of out there for us. What weavers do is they take yarn or string and they wrap it around a piece of wood, and that keeps everything straight, and it keeps themselves able to lift up and to rethread and so on. So a weaver's beam is a piece of wood that's about that big around. So the beam, the stick portion of his spear, is large enough to where most of us could not get our hand around it. So it speaks of the size of his hand to be able to throw that spear as being, you know, outsized in proportion. So he's got a weaver's beam for a spear. He's got 16 pounds of iron on the end of it and 100 pounds that he wears as his armament. He's about 8.5 feet tall, wider than a doorway. And so this tells you the kind of guy that he is. But there's something else about Goliath that is most notable, and that is that he's a big mouth. He comes along and he defies God and his people. And when David comes out, he curses David by his gods. So that's the thing about Goliath, is not only is he a big, strong, and powerful man, but his mouth speaks vanity, right? And so he belches out those kinds of, you know, that the barking of the dogs, like we read a couple weeks ago from the Psalter. So he's got a proposal for the army of Israel. You know, I'm just a guy. And so I'll come out and you send your best champion out and we'll fight. If we win, you'll be our servants. If you win, we'll be your servants. But why all this carnage and bloodshed? Let's just handle this mano a mano, one on one, and whoever wins. Well, coming from a guy like that, you could see how he might want to put the battle in array like that. Certainly a hardened warrior from his youth, like Saul says. And so this is the setup in verses 1 through 11. And notice the end of that. And when Saul and all Israel heard those words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. It was a very intimidating posture that he took. A very intimidating challenge that he took. Now notice, they didn't have to take him up on it. They could have said, we're not going to do the one-on-one thing. We're going to go army to army. Right? What is going on at this time in ancient Israel? Remember that the Israelites are already subjugated. They're already servants to the Philistines. The Lord has already caused the Philistines to ride over them because of their sins. They're already the servants to the Philistines. So this guy comes out, and he says, "Your servants to Saul, because this king has now risen up. No longer is Israel being ruled by judges, being ruled by a king." And so he says, "Okay, you're all servants to Saul. If you lose, you'll be servants to us instead." In other words, the Philistines are none too happy about the Israelites getting themselves a king. They see this as a threat to their hegemony over Israel. Okay? All right, so it is at this point then that we see David in verse 12, and this next section goes down to verse 30. And the first thing we see is the obedience of David. Where did we leave David in chapter 16? We left him playing the harp before Saul, right? Well, after that, what does he do? He returns to his father's house. Well, some might consider that a step back, but it was his duty. And so he takes it up with no complaint. Along with the next thing that his father tells him to do, sends him on an errand to go visit his three oldest brothers that are in the army following after Saul. And so he does. We see also the partisanship of David. He shouts for the battle. He has only confidence. He runs into the army. He is fearless and has an expectation only of victory because he trusts in the Lord. And so I'm sure that what we're hearing David say in the midst of the army is, "How come we haven't mixed it up yet? Don't you know we can only win? Come on." He has this great confidence in the Lord. And then he inquires as to the estate of the battle, and he hears the champion and his challenges, and then he hears also the reward for the one that that takes care of him, that kills him. And so what does David have in mind here? Yeah, well, David has in mind to kill him. All right, so then we have the reproach of the soldiers and his brethren. And so his faith is a reproach to their fear. But how do they respond? They respond in anger. Notice the strategy there. That's something that often takes place, isn't it? Whenever someone comes at us in anger, it may be because we've touched on their fear. Right? We've touched on something that's deeper than just the irritation. And so let's keep that in mind, right? Let's keep that in mind, how we speak to one another. Someone responds to us in anger, let's not just ourselves get uppity. Let's remember that maybe we've touched on something that, I'm not saying that their anger was justified. Neither was their fear justified. But David touched on it. And if we would be of service to them, let's not respond in kind, but think about the genesis of such things. Okay, so they think him a silly dreamer, a romantic boy, and his brother says, "You just wanted to come down here and see the battle. You wanted to spy out the battle. You wanted to fulfill your boyish fantasy, swinging your sword around in the background." You know, it's like the guy that says, "Why do people watch NASCAR racing? To see the crash, of course." Right? Why are you out here, David? You're just out here to see people mix it up. You're not out here yourself to take up any part. You're out here as a curious, a prurient little boy out here to spy out the battle. Well, Eliab was wrong that day, wasn't he? So, David spoke back to his brother. He spoke respectfully. He said, "Why are you speaking to me? Is there not a cause for me speaking like this? Is he not defying the armies of the living God? And should that not be answered?" And so he turns from his brother and continues speaking to the soldiers in the same way. And for their part, it's implied that they're not too happy with this, and so they take him to Saul. Saul will, send him home. And so David stands before Saul and he rehearses the same thing to Saul. And Saul says, "No, you can't go up against him. He's a soldier from his youth and you are only a youth. There's no way." What is Saul thinking? Or what should Saul be thinking about now with regard to his kingdom? Whoever loses is going to be servant to the other. I'm responsible for this entire kingdom. Can I really realistically send David out to fight against this Philistine? Because if he loses on the terms of the Philistine's challenge, we become servants to the Philistines. How can I do that? But sometime in the course of the conversation, because the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, and as the rivers of water, he turns it whithersoever he will, David tells him about the lion and the bear, And Saul says, okay. Can you imagine that? Put yourself in Saul's position. Is that the decision you would make? Again, we see the providence and supernatural ability of the Lord here as he turns the heart of the king. And so Saul says, well, you can't go like that. Put my armor on and go out. And so David puts it on, and I know the cartoons show this great big armor on top of a small, skinny little kid. I don't think that's how it was at all. I think the armor would have fit fine on David. The difficulty was that David had not trained with them on. Now, those of you, we have two police officers here. You know what that means when we talk about training with the right gear on. You don't want to get out into the battle with stuff you haven't used before. Think of pulling your weapon and having to fire it, or pulling out your sword and having to wield it, and if you've never done those things before. David says, you know, I need to go with what I know. I need to use the stuff that I use every day. That's better than me using superior weaponry without training. I can't go with these. I haven't tried them. So he takes them off, and he's got his shepherd's outfit. So he's got a staff, and he's got a sling, and he stops on the way out to meet the Philistine, and he has what a lot of preachers have found great fodder for preaching. He takes 5 smooth stones. Why 5? It only took 1. Why did he take 5? Well, maybe David was a good engineer and he understood a safety factor. Maybe that's what it was. Or maybe David had room for 5, and so he put 5 in his bag. I believe that it would have been presumptuous to take 1. And it would have been fearful to take armloads. He takes 5 because that is the right balance between faith and presumption. And so he takes 5 stones and he puts it in his bag. He puts them in his bag and he goes out to meet the Philistine. And so then we have the confrontation between David and the Philistine. And, you know, this is why movies with regard to Scripture are a bad idea. Because sometimes you'll see movies that have this thing, and I've seen a couple of them, and it looks like, you know, two WWF wrestlers, braggadocio and all, coming at each other. Please, it's not what's going on here at all. What you see is a very humble servant of the Lord in David, with complete reliance upon his God for victory. And then you see Goliath, who has every amount of confidence in the flesh that a man can have. Right? He looks on David. It's really funny what he says to him. He says, can I paraphrase it? He says, you're small. You're pretty. You're unarmed and unprepared. You come at me like I'm a dog with a stick. And then he curses David by his gods, and he taunts David with the threat of death. Here's David's reply. You come at me with a sword and shield, but I come to you in the name of Yahweh of hosts. Well, that says it all, right? You will die for the glory of God. Your entire people will be given to us. And I hope you noticed the change in the person there. It changes from the second person singular to the second person plural. Your entire people will be given to us. And it's not because we're better than you are. It is because the battle belongs to the Lord. And he will give it to whomsoever he will. And so comes Goliath. And David, we see he makes haste, not away from, but toward Goliath. And so we see a man here full of faith, with greatness of heart. Now remember, David is not some super saint. He doesn't have some wondrous advantage in birth or upbringing or something that we don't have. He doesn't have a third eye or a third arm or you know, 2 beating hearts or anything. He's a man just like we are. And yet he is a man full of faith, with greatness of heart. And he rises up and rushes toward Goliath. And he takes his sling and slings his stone. And the Lord causes that stone to fly with perfect aim into the forehead of Goliath. Sinks in other words, it breaks through the bone of his skull like some projectile. And Goliath falls to the ground. And ironically and fittingly, David takes Goliath's head off with his own sword, with Goliath's own sword. And so all of that killing that Goliath thought he would do with that sword ends up resting upon his own neck. The trap, the snare, the device that the wicked man wielded, it is that which catches him. Sounds like fodder for many psalms out of David's pen, doesn't it? And so then, after Goliath dies, David removes his head. The battle is joined by both armies. The Philistines are put to flight, and they chase them all the way to the sea, just about. That's to Ekron, which is toward the sea, and they chase them almost to the sea. And the Philistines are routed, and David and his men and the armies of Israel are victorious in the Lord. And finally then, David reveals himself to Saul as the son of Jesse the Bethlehemite. For Saul's part, note that although before this time David became Saul's armor bearer and played before him, that Saul did not take that much notice of him. So that he has to ask, whose son is this stripling? Stripling is just a way to say, this snot-nosed kid, this little boy. And, of course, David was not a little boy. David was a man of valor, a full-grown man in his youth, in perhaps his prime, or maybe not quite to his prime. But he was quite a man, able to take the sword of Goliath and wield it in that sense. So, thus ends the reading. True history, very encouraging. The Lord wrought victory out of what looked like an apparent defeat. Let's stand.